Running away from people now, 20, 10, and gone. Moneal, 67-yard touchdown run.
I've got reporters' notebooks older than Seth.
Fonte was always soft. Can't win on the road, they say.
DeVito, pop pass, end zone, touchdown, and the ball game. DeVito, in relief, wins it for the Orange.
This is Orange Nation, brought to you by Charles Heating and Air Conditioning with Stephen Fonte and Seth Goldberg.
Good afternoon, everyone. Glad to have you with us alongside Seth Goldberg. I'm Stephen Fonte as we welcome you into a Thursday edition of Orange Nation. 315-437-7644 is the number if you like to get involved in the program. We've got two guests lined up for you. Our good friend Joe Gorcho from WIS in Columbia, South Carolina, set to join us in about 20 minutes from now as we preview Syracuse and Clemson. And then Steve Andrus from Radio.com Sports will be in towards the end of hour number two, around 1:30 or so, as we get you set for week 7 of the fantasy football season. And your phone calls welcome at any time, 315-437-7644. How are you today, Seth?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Doing well. We're pushing closer to Friday, which means we're closer to the weekend.
Always a positive.
It is a positive. Although this weekend, we're going to have to sit through a Syracuse-Clemson game that not too many people are giving the Orange a chance in, or a chance to even be competitive in. I read this earlier today. I mean, I guess it makes sense, but I didn't really stop to think about it until I read it. So Clemson is about a 46.5-point favorite. That is the largest spread, not only for Syracuse in terms of being the underdog, it's the most points that Clemson has been favored by in a game against an FBS opponent ever.
That makes sense.
It does make sense.
That makes sense. Well, and did you see the article on Syracuse.com this week that was outlining the biggest spreads in Syracuse games?
I saw the headline. I didn't read the article.
So, look, there were some. You know, they play Rutgers. They played a Louisville team that was bad in the, you know, in the mid-2000s. And you get, like, these outrageous spreads. They weren't this. You know, they were high 20s, low to mid-30s. The numbers that got, you know, high 30s, 40s, and higher were all against FCS teams. It was against Buffalo before they were in the MAC. It was Central Connecticut State a couple of years ago. It's the Wagner games. It's those kinds of games that have this spread, and very, very rarely, and that's why that doesn't shock me, but very rarely do you see, particularly in a conference game, where a team is a 45-point underdog. I can't think of another situation. Like, maybe like an Oklahoma playing a Kansas.
Yeah, Kansas,
like,
is pretty bad.
I can imagine that at some point in the last couple of years, Kansas was probably like a 35-40-point underdog.
Here's the thing that's kind of alarming about that, is that Kansas is widely considered the worst FBS program in the country.
Consistently.
Or at least the worst Power 5, certainly, program in the country. One of the worst FBS programs in the country. And so the fact that that is the example you give is concerning, because you wouldn't think that the largest point spread in the history of Clemson football would come against Syracuse. There are plenty of other, you know, bottom dwellers in the ACC and have been over the course of the last 10 years since Clemson's been really, really good. But the fact that it's the most ever, it makes sense, but it was surprising to me to see that Clemson's never been favored by more. The last time that they were in this kind of territory in terms of being favored by close to this many points against an FBS opponent, rather, was 2 years ago, 2018. They were a 39-point favorite against Louisville. You want to take a guess what the final score of that game was? Louisville did not cover.
No, I didn't think they did, because that was Bobby Petrino's last season. And if you remember correctly, everybody was getting their licks in on Bobby Petrino. They probably lost that game by 50, right?
Yeah, they lost by 51. They lost 77-16.
I was scary close on that one.
You were scary close. That was a good guess. So those are the kind of odds that Syracuse is up against this weekend. And, you know, you mentioned to me before the show, you said, is there anything you feel good about from a Syracuse perspective, anything at all that you feel good about from a Syracuse perspective going into this game?
Like, not a matchup that they would win. I don't want to suggest that, because I don't think that there's a matchup they win anywhere across the board. Because, you know, even if you look at the best unit, the best, the brightest spot on Syracuse's team right now is probably Sean Tucker. I don't think that that's, you know, saying anything too crazy. And there's only an all-time great running back on the other side of the field. Like, yeah, you're not winning that matchup either. So I don't think that you're winning any matchups, but are there any you feel like decent about?
So I found this stat, and again, sometimes numbers can lie and stats can be deceiving. I think this may be one of those stats, but it is a stat that is factually correct about Trevor Lawrence. So this season, when under pressure, he is completing 29% of his passes, has one touchdown and one interception. Now, the reason that that can be deceiving, that numbers lie, is that he hasn't been under pressure all that much.
That's what I was going to say.
And whether or not Syracuse can actually get pressure on him, that's a whole nother story. But we know that SU has done a nice job forcing turnovers this year. That's really the one thing that the defense can hang its hat on. At times, they've been able to get pressure on the opposing quarterback. I'm not convinced that they're going to be able to get much pressure on Trevor Lawrence. But again, that's been the one area that he's quote-unquote struggled in to some degree.
So you're thinking if Josh Black, McKinley Williams, Kingsley Jonathan, because those three are good defensive linemen.
You're going to have to send more than that.
No, but yes. But you're saying if the basis of them, Stephon Thompson, Tyrell Richards, can get pressure, maybe they can do some things. The question is,
maybe
though,
they can force a mistake.
Right. The question is, though, can they consistently get pressure against an offensive line that is going to send offensive linemen to the NFL?
Highly doubt it. And that's why they may have to, you know, here's the danger. You want to get pressure on Trevor Lawrence, you probably can't do it without blitzing a lot. And if you blitz a lot, he's an NFL quarterback, and the potential is there that, you know, you leave your cornerbacks one-on-one with those receivers, the potential is there that, you know, you get lit up. The potential's there anyway. Even if you sit back and you don't send a lot of blitzes, the potential is there that you're going to get lit up. So, you know, that is, you asked me the question. I know it's not a great answer, but I'm throwing, you know, I'm reaching here in terms of what do you feel good about? Well, if you can get some pressure on Trevor Lawrence, maybe you can force some mistakes. Maybe you can get a couple of short fields. Maybe you can get some points on the board. You know, is that going to be enough to cover the spread or, you know, make it competitive? Make it competitive, no. Can they cover the spread? You know, 46 points, that's a lot of points. You know, could they stay within, you know, 40 points or so? I saw several, like, computer projections of this game. Three different ones, in fact. All of them had Clemson winning between 35 to 40 points, which would be covering the spread. So I think Syracuse could cover the spread. Are they going to be competitive? I highly doubt it.
Right. There's a difference when the spread is this big, competitive versus cover. I don't know that they're either. You know, I don't know that they end up being either in this game, largely because as good as Trevor Lawrence is, and he's absolutely a strength, and, you know, it's a strength to throw to guys like Amari Rodgers and to Frank Ladson and to the weapons that they have, Travis Etienne is darn good. Darn good. And this Syracuse defense is just horrible against the run. Just horrible. And they have been particularly in the last two games. So what happens when somebody who is coming into play averaging 6.5 yards per carry goes up against a defense that over the last couple of weeks has allowed
7 yards per carry against Liberty last week.
Right. You know, so what happens when you have a running back who's already putting up those numbers against presumably better defenses, and now he's going to go up against your defense that isn't good, that is allowing those numbers to, you know, the Liberty running backs, who's allowing, you know, holes and alleys to be opened up by Liberty linebackers, linemen, I should say. Clemson's linemen are going to open up the same holes, if not bigger. They're going to part the field. These guys are going to get shoved to the hash marks, and ETN's just going to run right through the middle of the field.
So I saw Matt Park tweet this out yesterday, and it kind of speaks to your point about Travis Etienne. He tweeted out that Travis Etienne has run for 347 yards and four touchdowns in three games against Syracuse. Nobody on SU's travel roster for this game has 300 yards rushing or four touchdowns in their career. So
yeah,
gives you some idea of you know, the haves versus the have-nots.
I also saw
in this matchup.
I also saw a stat about Travis Etienne last week that he's now for his career. Think about this for a second. He's got over 2,500 rushing yards after contact in his career. Like, there are really good college running backs that don't get to 2,500 rushing yards.
Period. Right.
Period. Yeah. Because they end up leaving for the draft, or they're good, but they're not like that good. But you could tell, like, hey, these guys are really good. 2,500 rushing yards after contact. Like, you're talking about a guy who's going to put up 5,000 rushing yards over the course of his college career. That is an all-time great. That is college football Hall of Fame good.
I mean, this could be the kind of thing that, you know, we talked about on Monday and Tuesday following that Bills game, when we said, you know, Patrick Mahomes, was it a case of he wasn't able to, you know, throw the ball against the Bills, or didn't need to throw the ball against the Bills? And it was the latter. He didn't need to throw the ball against the Bills because the rushing attack had it going. And we could see this on Saturday, where Trevor Lawrence might not put up the gaudy stats that you expect him to, because he might not need to. He might not need to throw the football all
Lawrence
that much.
Lawrence is going
to
be 12 of 15 for 200 yards and a couple touchdowns?
I mean, it could be. I mean, he might not put up the, you know, the crazy stats that he did against Georgia Tech, because he might not need to. They may just go to the ground, and Travis Etienne may have a field day. In regards to Lawrence, I saw this comparison on a Clemson website, TigerNet.com, where they compared his 2019 numbers through five games to his 2020 numbers through five games. So last year at this time, he was only completing 62% of his passes. He had 8 touchdowns, 5 picks, and about 1,100 passing yards. This year, he's completing 73% of his passes, 15 touchdowns, 1 pick, and over 1,500 passing yards. So, as good as he was last year, his performance, and he got off to a slow start. He had some turnover issues early in the career, early in the season last year. But in terms of his numbers across the board this year are significantly better than last year, when he was among the best quarterbacks in the country. I mean, Joe Burrow was the best quarterback in the country last year, but still, you know, Trevor Lawrence was among them, and his numbers are significantly better this year on top of that.
Well, so that's the scary part, isn't it? Because I remember, Steve, coming into this studio 2 years ago, just about 2 years ago, after he won the title as a true freshman, and I remember sitting there saying, I want him starting for the Giants next September. Like, he's good enough, right? Like, I think that was kind of the general consensus after they won that title. Oh, he's good enough right now to go play in the NFL. And he has only gotten better from that point 2 years ago. You know, it's not a situation where he's plateaued. It's not a situation where his numbers haven't improved. They improved slightly last year, and now this year they're taking a huge jump forward. And just go look at some of the tape. Go look at some of the throws that he's made. He made one last week that was just remarkable, where he's rolling out to his left, right? So the wrong side to be rolling out to. He turns, opens his body, and just fires a bullet right at the receiver in the middle of the end zone, and hits him right in the numbers. Like, he's just doing things that are incredible to go along with these incredible numbers. And he very well could just go like 12 of 15, 250 yards and a touchdown or two on Saturday. Like, that's very possible. He could also just light it up and, you know, throw for 400 yards because he can.
It's like, pick your poison, right, with this team. I mean, it was last year, and we saw what they did to Syracuse inside the dome. The game was close for a while, and then when they find that extra gear, they shifted into that next gear. It's lights out. It's pick your poison with them. They can beat you through the air. They can beat you on the ground. They can really beat you any way that they want to.
Right. And I guess the larger point is, like, it looks like it's going to be the Jets, but whoever gets that pick is pretty darn lucky that they're getting that talent.
Yeah.
You know, you're seeing the growth. You're seeing how he's built 1 year to the next. And he's going to go. I mean, he's as can't miss an NFL quarterback as there is.
I know this is beside the point, but we have a minute or two here, so I'll bring it up now. Sam Darnold, is he just a bad quarterback because he plays for the Jets? If he goes somewhere else, if the Jets get Trevor Lawrence, and obviously if they have number one pick, they're going to take Trevor Lawrence. What happens to Sam Darnold? Does he go somewhere else, and do you think he becomes a serviceable starter somewhere else?
Adam Gase's track record would suggest yes.
Yeah, right.
Right. Adam Gase's track record would suggest he goes somewhere else and he gets good. Because, like, I think he's good. Right? Like, I think there's talent there. He's shown some things and some glimmers, and even the back half of last year, he was pretty good. So I don't know what's going on. So, I feel like it's Jets and Gase. Like, I don't want Trevor Lawrence to go to the Jets. I really don't. But, it's going to happen. I mean, like, if you have the opportunity to get him, you have to bail on Sam Darnold, right?
There's no doubt.
Like, there's no question you have to bail on Sam Darnold.
But if you're Trevor Lawrence, do you try to... maneuver
yes.
a trade.
Yes,
or
I absolutely
apply as much
do.
Pressure as you can. You know, I'm going back to school if you're going to draft me type
yes.
of thing.
Yes, absolutely, 100%. I pull an Eli, I pull a John Elway. I tell them I'm going to become a baseball player. Anything.
Even if he doesn't play
anything,
baseball.
Anything. Yep. He's never touched a baseball in his life. He's going to be a pitcher.
Whatever to not play for the Jets. I love
That's
it.
That's what I would do.
You said before the show they're, a 22-point underdog in 2 weeks against the Chiefs?
Yeah, the future line. Their game in 10 days against the Chiefs. 22-point underdogs. That's the NFL version of this game Saturday, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It really
That's
is.
That's the NFL version of being a 46-point underdog.
Yeah, you don't see that in the NFL.
No.
They're all professionals. They're all really good.
I take the Chiefs.
I think I probably would as well. All right,
want to do that now before it goes up.
Right. We got to take our first time out. We're going to bring in Joe Gorcho on the other side of the break from WIS in Columbia, South Carolina. He'll fill us in on just how good this Clemson Tiger team is. We're back after this, just getting started on a Thursday edition of Orange Nation. Back after this on ESPN Radio.
This is Orange Nation, brought to you by Charles Heating and Air Conditioning with Stephen Fonte and Seth Goldberg.
Hour number two of Orange Nation underway on ESPN Radio is brought to you by Route 34. You pull them 315-437-7644. Phone lines open until 1:30 or so when we bring on Steve Andrus from Radio.com Sports to get you set for week 7 of the fantasy football season. Week 7 of the NFL season kicking off tonight. Seth, your New York Giants with a divisional rival, the Philadelphia Eagles. Eagles 1-4-1, Giants 1-5. The winner will essentially be tied for first place in the NFC East.
It's amazing.
Giants would be technically a half game behind the Cowboys because they've played more games. But a couple weeks ago, you're talking about the Jets and Giants battling it out for who's going to get the number one overall pick, and both teams might finish 0-16. And then, last week I said, I think the Giants might win this week. Sure enough, they did. And now all of a sudden, they have a chance to... essentially pull even atop the division standings. Doesn't say a lot about the division, but it's...
But it says more about the division than it does about the Giants.
That's true.
The Giants are bad. The Giants are a 2 or 3 win team. The fact that they might win 2 or 3 games isn't stunning. The fact that they are going to have 2 or 3 wins and be in play for their division is shocking.
I mean, you look at their schedule coming up. You say that they're a 2 or 3 win team.
Well, I mean, based on, the team that they have.
No, I know. Right. Okay, so you're saying in a normal year. Well, this isn't a normal year because their division is awful. And so you look at their schedule coming up. They just beat Washington, the Washington football team.
Got the football team. Eagles. They're going to get annihilated next week on Monday Night Football.
Well, right. They've got Tampa Bay next, but they've got the Eagles tonight. Then Tampa Bay, and then Washington and Philly again. For their next 5 games, four of their 5, I know they just played Washington, but they'll go through a stretch of 4 of 5 are against Washington and Philadelphia.
They're going to win the division.
I mean, it all joking aside.
They really might.
Then they're at Cincinnati the week after that. I mean, it's not unreasonable to think.
Yeah, but then look at what they finish with. Look at what they finish with. They've got Seattle, Arizona, Cleveland, Baltimore 4 straight weeks after that Cincinnati game.
So that's 4 straight losses.
So that's 4 straight losses, and then Dallas is a toss-up.
But you were talking yesterday about how, 4 wins, there's a mathematical model out there that suggests maybe 4 wins could be enough. Now, again, that's exaggerating, and, we're joking about it, but could they get to 6-10 and win the division at 6-10?
If they beat Philly, Washington, Philly, and then So that would be Dallas. That's
four.
Five.
That's five. Okay, and at Cincinnati,
that might win. Five might win the division. Like again, it's so sad and it's so pathetic. Five might win the division.
Now you said something during the break that I think we should bring up on the air. You said, "How can the NFL allow a team if 6-10 wins the division? How can the NFL allow a team?
You can't. You can't.
But you can't change the rules in the middle of the season.
I know, but then they have to change them like
moving forward,
March 1st."
For next year.
Yes. They have to be. You can't allow a 5-11 team to make the playoffs. You shouldn't allow a 7-9 team to make the playoffs. You absolutely can't allow 6-10 or 5-11. And what's even worse, you can't allow them to host that game.
Yeah. Well, that I think
like,
that's the
insane.
Bigger that's the bigger issue, I think.
Like I don't think I think that you can argue you can very fairly argue, hey, division winners, no matter what, should have a guaranteed playoff spot. And I'm fine with that. But I also don't think that division winners should have a guaranteed home game.
Yeah, that's
like
the
bigger issue. In a normal year, if you're 10-6 and the first wild card is 12-4, right? Like if just say for argument's sake that the Raiders are incredible, right? Like the Raiders go 13-3 one year. But they just so happen to be in the Chiefs division, and the Chiefs are 14-2 or 15-1. There's no reason the Raiders should be going on the road. The Raiders should get the number 2 seed, and they should get the home games in the playoffs. And like there shouldn't be much thought about this. And I feel the same way, you know, on the NFC side. Obviously, if you have a team that's 8-8, they shouldn't be hosting a 10-6 wild card team. If they're playing with a better record, they shouldn't be hosting them. And if they have a sub-500 record, they certainly shouldn't be guaranteed hosting rights. And I don't think they should be guaranteed a playoff spot. Like, I think that there should be a minimum requirement here.
Yeah, I don't think you can keep a team out that wins its own division. I mean, you look at some of the other divisions in the NFL, like look at the NFC West, for instance. I mean, there's some really good teams in there, right? Seattle, Arizona, the Rams are 4-2, Niners are 3-3. They've suffered through a lot of injuries.
Right, and why should that division that could all finish 500 or better be punished because the NFC East is all going to finish below 500?
Well, what I was going to say was, so that's, we look at that and we say, well, that's a good division, but let's say that they all beat up on each other through the regular season and, you know, they're all around 500 when things are said and done, or maybe just, they're 8-8 or they're 9-7. You know, there are several... You could have several good teams in that division, but their record isn't as good as others because of who they've played, I guess is
that
my point.
That division this year also gets four games against the NFC East.
Right. But if they had...
The Rams are 4-2 this year. All four of their wins are the NFC East.
Right. So that's my point, though, is that, you know, records sometimes, you know, are... I know that the saying goes that you are what your record says you are, but you could have a team that's better than their record would indicate is my point. So... Even if a team goes 7-9, they win their division. Maybe it's a good division. Maybe it's just an evenly matched division. Everybody beat up on each other during the regular season. I don't think you can leave the division champ out, but I am with you on that. You know, I don't think you should just automatically host a playoff game because you won your division.
No,
I think that
like,
should go
insane.
That should go by record in the conference.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you shouldn't host a playoff game just because you won your division. I think that the NBA has done a good job over the last, decade or so of phasing that out, where you used to get a top 3 seed if you won your division, and they were like, what if we just make the 3 division winners the top 4 seeds? And then they were like, or what if we just give them a playoff spot?
Right.
Like they slowly kind of morphed out of it. So, you know, maybe the first step is, hey, you know what? That 5-11 Cowboys team doesn't get to host a playoff game, you know, moving forward. That's not how we're going to do things. And then in 5 years, when it happens again, it's going to be like, hey, you know what? That 5-11 Eagles team doesn't deserve to be in the playoffs.
We should probably make a change.
It doesn't happen often enough in the NFL, but at the same time, it happens. Like, it does happen.
And as evidence of what we're seeing right now.
Right. And, I mean, the thing is that you can really count on your hands the number of times. Like, they pop to mind easily because there are so few of them. You know, and the one that comes to mind really easily is that Seahawks team that won. You know, they won because they were playing in Seattle and had such a great home field advantage against the Saints team that was really good.
Right. And that does seem like a disservice to the Saints to make him go on the road for that game.
Especially there.
Right. But I do think a team that finishes with a sub 500 record, if they win their division, they should be allowed in. Let me ask you this. Which fan base is more excited about their future right now? Jets or the Giants?
Oof. Wow. I don't think either can be that excited.
I guess the reason I bring it up is that I feel like the Jets fan base is legitimately excited about Trevor Lawrence. But
yes,
is there anything for the Giants fan base to be truly excited about?
No, but doesn't the Jets fan excitement hinge on whether they actually fire Adam Gase?
Yes, but don't you think that's a foregone conclusion?
Yes and no.
Matter of when,
yes,
not if.
Yes and no. Who's firing him? Because he's clearly got something going with Chris Johnson, who's the acting owner of the Jets, as Woody Johnson is the ambassador. Is that what it takes? Does it take a change in the presidential election so that Woody Johnson is no longer ambassador to the UK and he comes back to run the team and then he can come in and be like, this dope, get him out of here.
This isn't
like
working.
Maybe that's what it takes. But, you know, all kidding aside, Adam Gase clearly has something with Chris Johnson, who's running the team right now. They hired the GM in consultation with Adam Gase. So it's somebody that he likes. They got rid of the team president, right? Not like the football operations, the team president, and replaced him with somebody who has a relationship with Gase. Like, it is mind-blowing what they've done to bend over backwards for this guy who's a bad NFL coach.
Right, but you never fire the players, you fire the coach, right? And so even if, let's just say worst-case scenario for Jet fans, Adam Gase maintains his position there, keeps his job into next year. They get Trevor Lawrence, and then they're god-awful again next year. And, you know, with the thought in mind of, well, let's see what he can do with Trevor Lawrence. At some point, Gase will lose his job, and a new coach will come in. In terms of the personnel, though, on the field, I think there is... Listen, everybody's talking about Trevor Lawrence as though he's the next, you know, Andrew Luck or Peyton Manning. He's the, you know, the next can't miss quarterback prospect. You know, I heard that the other day. He's the best quarterback prospect since Andrew Luck. If you've got Andrew Luck joining your team, I feel like there is a lot of excitement about, okay, you know, let's see what he can do. He, you know, make our team good like Andrew Luck
yes.
made the Colts good.
Yeah, no, and I think that you're right, because if you look at it on the Giants side of things, there is nothing to look forward to. It doesn't look like Daniel Jones is the real deal. Saquon Barkley has now torn his ACL, and you have no idea how he's going to react and come back to that. You know, you think the coach, you know, I don't hate the coach. Like, the change that they made there seems to have worked, but also... they benched at various times last week the number 4 overall pick from this past year in favor of a 4th rounder. Like, so how do you have confidence in anything that the football leadership there is doing? Like, I don't think that you can feel any kind of confidence or excitement moving forward if you're a Giants fan, again, until the change is made. And how long have I been saying that about the Giants?
Right.
Like, I've been saying that for 3 years, that I can't feel excitement about this team until Dave Gettleman's not in charge, almost from the minute he got hired. And, you know, it's that's stunning. Like, I guess if you're a Jets fan, at least you have Trevor Lawrence. At least you have this promise of, oh my goodness, look at that guy. I don't know what you have. You're the Giants.
Yeah, and that's why I'm bringing it up, because I do think, listen, I'm not a fan of either team, but I would have to think that you're probably more excited, quote-unquote, if you're a Giants fan at the prospect of getting Trevor Lawrence and the prospect of what he can do.
Why don't I text my brother? I can see if he can answer me. He doesn't usually answer me until he sends me something that he thinks I would like. Then he's all in on conversation, but he did that about 20 minutes ago, so maybe he'll answer.
All right. Well, we're going to take a break. We'll see if your brother responds. We're back after this on ESPN Radio.
On Twitch, Q Sports Talk and ESPN Radio 97.7 at 100.1. Our take on the day's top stories. It's Today's Business on Orange Nation.
All right, quick segment here. We've got Steve Andrews from Radio.com Sports set to join us in the next segment as we preview week 7 of the fantasy football season. What do you have for us in today's business, Seth?
Let's start off with the NFL, Steve. The Baltimore Ravens are making moves. Baltimore Ravens have reportedly, or will reportedly, sign Dez Bryant to their practice squad. Pending a workout today. I feel like the Dez Bryant to the Ravens rumors have been, 5 years strong at this point? They've also, in a much bigger deal, they have traded for Yannick Ngakoue. I believe he was with the Vikings. And he's now playing under a franchise tag, so they've got the defensive end. And they will have the first crack at his contract negotiations next offseason.
What do you think about Dez? It's 31.
Probably toast.
You think?
I mean, he hasn't played in how long?
He's still young enough, though.
I didn't realize he was only 31. That surprises me.
I just looked it up when you mentioned that story.
He hasn't played since 2017.
Right.
And in the time being, has torn his Achilles.
Well, that's not good.
Remember, he was with the Browns and tore his Achilles.
Right.
So, I don't know, or the Saints, sorry, not the Browns.
It was
the
Saints in 2018, right.
So, I don't know. I'm skeptical that he's a legit, like, difference maker. I'm skeptical he's a legit difference maker.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm intrigued.
Like, I think they've got better guys already.
Well, that's why he's on the practice squad. You see what he can do. But at 31, I mean, he's
certainly not over the hill yet.
In theory. He's got some years left in the tank if he's, you know, again, if his legs are healthy and, you know, if the Achilles is fully healed. And I mean, we know that is a tough injury to come back from. You know, basketball players talk about that. They lose their explosiveness. I would imagine the same thing holds true for a wide receiver. I don't know if you're ever the same after that. But, I mean, we've also seen some basketball players come back from it and be just fine. Breanna Stewart had that injury and she didn't miss a beat, you know. So, we'll see. I'm intrigued by it, though. 31 years old, joins the practice squad. They'll give him a look, see what he can do, and see if he's ready to join the active roster. Interesting.
How about another receiver that has been in the headlines the last couple of years? That's Antonio Brown. He's been in the headlines for bad reasons that Dez has never really had. But Antonio Brown, his suspension could end after week 8. And it is it's being talked about that maybe he would join a team and a roster. The Seahawks are kind of at the top of the list. The Ravens were also mentioned in this same kind of idea. Do you think that a team should jump on Antonio Brown?
No. He's a guy that does not belong in the NFL. I certainly wouldn't want my team to touch him, and somebody will sign him, and that's just the nature of the business. But do I think that he deserves another shot in the league? I don't.
Last thing, and maybe we have to ask.
Before we move on, do you?
No, it's about that.
Oh, it's about that.
No,
okay.
I don't. No, I don't think he. No, I would not touch him. No, not at all. I would not offer him anything. I would not want him on my team. Not in any way, shape, or form. Fair or foul here by Adam Schefter, and Matthew Berry posted this on Twitter, posted it on his Instagram. Adam Schefter is in Matthew Berry's fantasy league, picked up Antonio Brown. Fair or foul? I feel like that's not fair. Adam Schefter's got all the inside information He's like the insider's insider. He can't be using that in his fantasy league.
I think he absolutely can. Because
because look, you would do stuff in fantasy based on information that you're not going to report, right? Like he could have that, like,
made the
pick
up a minute before he announced.
No. That's not what I'm saying. You know the reports that, like, you know, but you don't know.
Yeah, sure.
Like, Adam Schefter's got those, right? Like, could you imagine what he knows but doesn't know?
Right.
Like, if what he knows is that. Like, could you imagine what he thinks he knows? So, if he's making moves off of, like, the things he thinks he knows that are absolutely going to happen, no, he can't be doing that. Like, if he had his fantasy draft the night before Andrew Luck retired, and he was the one who broke the story that Andrew Luck retired, like, he knew it 24 hours earlier. He had heard. He'd gotten whispers. He can't be drafting. No, he can't use that information.
If he made a move before it was reported, like if he knew something and he
made
the move,
I think he did.
If he made that move before it was reported, then yeah, that's like insider trading. That would be foul.
It feels insider trading-y, doesn't it?
Yeah, but I mean, everybody knows when Antonio Brown's suspension comes to an end. So if he just proactively is like,
My guess is Antonio Brown's going to end up on a team, because that would be my guess as well. If he's eligible to return, my guess is somebody's going to give him a chance. And listen, from a stats standpoint, he can help you. Again, wouldn't want him on my team. Hope he doesn't come back to the NFL. But if Schefter's doing it, just the feeling is that he's going to return and play for somebody, I'm okay with
it. Okay, how do we feel about the timestamps on here, though? Because the picking up of Antonio Brown was done sometime in the 1 o'clock hour. I can't quite see the exact time on it. And Seth Markman, who runs ESPN's NFL department, the lead producer, is actually the one who tweeted this. He said, "Now I know what time Adam Schefter got the call about AB." The tweet that Adam Schefter sent out about Antonio Brown did not go out until 4 o'clock.
Ooh.
That is insider
that
trading.
That does sound like insider trading.
That is shady.
Ooh.
That is shady.
You will have to ask Steve about that. All right, we'll take a break. Steve Andrus from Radio.com Sports joins us next to talk fantasy football.